And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, interconnectedness, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And Sitarani Palomar.
Are you one of those people that have been thinking about starting your own green business for months or even years? We're excited about today's shows as we are celebrating new exciting business models in the world of green and sustainability that have sprung up or hopefully will spring up soon. In this hour, you will hear the best business tips and practices from the people working in this field every day, eco-entrepreneurs growing a green business today on An Organic Conversation.
Yeah, you know, I travel all over the country and I work with retail stores, and a lot of businesses are trying to be more and more green. But what exactly is that?
Well, we'll find out.
Yeah, the workplace is where we spend so much time. It's such an easy place that if we make a difference in our green approach, we will have lasting impact. So I'm curious what kind of things we can do at work to change our footprint.
That's so true. It's like, I think the most time spent is either at work or in bed, mm-hmm. right? Those two environments.
Now,
are...
if we just moved our beds or...
Okay, yes. Thanks, Mark.
But first, before we get on with the show, here's the green headlines with Jen Lloyd.
Thank you, Mark. Court orders FDA to regulate antibiotics in livestock. A New York court passed a ruling in late March that will require the FDA to begin regulating the use of antibiotics in livestock. The lawsuit, which is being touted as one of the most significant victories for public health in decades, was brought by the Natural Resources Defense Council and a coalition of other organizations who argued that the FDA, which had been sitting on research that proved a connection between antibiotics in livestock and drug-resistant bugs in humans since 1977, had a responsibility to act on the information. While the establishment of the regulation process is sure to be long, the first steps have been made. USDA says eating local is the biggest food trend in decades. The USDA's National Organic Program, NOP, has announced that locally produced food is the biggest food trend we've seen in decades. Furthermore, the natural and organic food market is on track to outpace the growth of the total food market in the U.S. The NOP hopes to help consumers in the future by encouraging local organic production, eliminating the choice between buy organic and buy local, as that is often the toughest choice that must be made at the grocery store. Saguaro National Park bans sale of disposable bottled beverages. Following on the heels of the Grand Canyon's ban on sales of bottled water in the park, Arizona's Saguaro National Park has instituted a ban of its own. The park will not only stop selling bottled water, but sodas as well, cutting out all the disposable plastic from vending machines. The ban will remove an estimated 15% of the waste from the park and up to 40% of what is currently recycled. As an alternative, the park will provide refilling stations for visitors to fill up their own reusable water bottles. And dirt is essential to healthier kids, a study says. A new study led by scientists at Brigham and Women's Hospital has put science behind the long-held hygiene hypothesis, which states that children raised on farms and in rural environments have stronger immune systems than those raised in cities. The study found that exposure to certain microbes early in life, like those found in dirt, help train immune cells to resist disease later in life. Exposure to the same microbes as an adult did not yield the same effect. So go ahead, let your kids go play in the dirt. And those are the green headlines. Back to you, Helga.
Thanks, Jen. Jen Lloyd, for that weekly update of what's going on in the world of green and sustainability. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And I love that. 15% of waste reduction because of plastic bottle removal in national parks. National parks usually the destination for education and getting in touch with your natural environment. That's wonderful. But what's up with the dirt? Kids who eat dirt are healthier.
Kids who play in the dirt.
Oh,
and
yeah,
eat
that's
dirt,
right.
Both.
Yeah, well, you kind of do eat dirt. yes.
Well, and Helga, weren't you telling us about a report about farm kids actually?
That was actually the study led on with, started off with farm kids who are exposed to dirt in their natural environment and playing environment are more exposed and through, you know, ingestion and through touch, through contact, have a healthier immune system, now scientifically proven. So, well, you know, unfortunately, we live in a world where fear is the dominant factor when it comes to the natural environment. Just looking around here in the studio, there's, you know, a can of Lysol and whatnot. And it's so funny how this country is really so often based on trying to kill it, antibiotic use, you know, even as a prophylactic measure, instead of, you know, to some degree embracing that and making, knowing that it has a function.
Well, and with our fruits and vegetables too, right? I mean, there's this feeling that we have to scrub everything off to make sure that there isn't any residue from pesticides. If you're buying organic, I mean, I don't really spend that much time worrying about making sure I fully rinse my strawberries or rinsed my mushrooms.
Yes,
I mean,
so true.
Just doesn't seem
a little bit of dirt.
Well, yeah. And you know, we were talking before the show about this particular topic, and you know, I grew up in the dirt. Sita, you grew up in the dirt. Helga, you grew up in the dirt. How you got in the dirt on your boat, I don't know, but that's a whole nother thing. Your parents wondered that too. But that was just a common thing. You left at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. You came back. You played baseball. You were in the creek. You were in a field. You were just all over the place in dirt. And then about 20 years ago, there was a kind of a shift where people started. You know, you had to be clean, and you had to be, you had to, you know, have
antibacterial hand soap and lotion. Yeah, I think
on everything.
That's where it started. Yes.
And you know, and now they're finding that actually the kids need it.
And don't let your dog lick your kid's face. Actually, that's, you know, all that helps to bring him up in an environment where bacteria is abundant and important,
and their immune system gets stronger.
That's right. Yeah. Yes.
Cool study.
Anyway, yes, we'll follow up on that one as well. You are listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
But we'll take a quick break and then come back with our first interview about eco-entrepreneurs. Today's topic on An Organic Conversation, growing a green business or making an existing business more green. More and that when we come back right after the break. Stay tuned.
Places I remember all my life, though some have changed, some forever, not for better, some have gone and some remain. All these places have their moments with lovers and friends I still can recall.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
Hi, I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Today's topic is eco-entrepreneurs growing a green business. Most of us had a business idea at least once in their lifetime. Some stroke of genius of a product or service that is not available or could be so much better if it was done differently. How do we go beyond the idea and actually start exploring what is possible? This organic movement holds countless opportunities to start your own business as people recognize value and intention and will support responsible business practices. This is the time where people want to know where their food comes from. It's the time of storytelling, real stories, authentic stories, and it is the time to tell your story. From cupcakes to holistic doggy care, from green moving services to shared office spaces, today's episode of An Organic Conversation is dedicated to putting your business dream in motion. Our topic today, eco-entrepreneurs growing a green business. And with us now is Dr. Glenn Croston, calling in from San Diego, California, who is the founder of Starting Up Green and the author of two books, 75 Green Businesses You Can Start to Make Money and Make a Difference, and also an eco-entrepreneur's toolkit for starting a green business, from business plan to profits. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great, pleasure. Thanks for making the time.
Hi, Glenn. I love that. Make money and make a difference. Can you tell us about starting up Green, just to get us kind of started and in the right spirit? How did you get inspired to start that company?
Sure. So I'm a biologist by training, and along the way as a biologist, I guess that you're kind of in touch with what's going on out there in the natural world and our impact on it, and kind of looking for ways to make a difference regarding that, because you see that there are a lot of problems in the world, things there where we're kind of headed in the wrong direction regarding our impact on nature. And with 7 billion people on the planet now, it's a pretty big impact. There's really kind of no part of the planet that isn't touched. So, you know, they're seeing all those problems, and then as a father, kind of wondering what the world's going to be like for my kids down the road and wanting them to have a great world to grow up into. And then thinking, you know, gee, but it's not enough to talk about the problems. And we hear a lot about the doom and gloom, about the bad things that are happening, but what are we going to do about it? You know, what are the solutions that we can devise? And thinking that the business world has a big role to play there, that all of these problems that we have, every one of those problems is an opportunity for people who can figure out a solution and build a business around that. So that's what I'm trying to do. That's where I wanted to get involved, is by working with companies, by writing my books, by working with folks with ideas out there that so they can get involved too and try to make a difference too.
And it's amazing if you look at the leverage large corporations have and also small corporations have, or small companies, from the educational opportunity to really the resources used or materials used, including 1 or 2% of organic cotton in an international cotton line, makes a huge difference on the overall cotton growing, organic cotton growing industry. You know, helps other cotton growers to go organic, et cetera. And that's just one example. What do you directly offer? An eco entrepreneur's toolkit? No, it's actually an ecopreneur's toolkit for starting a green business. Tell us about the services you offer. How do you go about your work?
Well, so it's usually one of three things. And one would be talking operationally about what people can do to build sustainability into their business, trying to find things which are both good for the environment and good for their business. That's one of the assumptions people often have, is the two don't really go together, that sure, you can go green, but it's really expensive, it's really hard. And so, you know, we work to find ways which do make sense both for the business and for the environment. So that's one. And another one is...
What would fall under operational when you say that? Like, what can you describe that area a little more?
Oh, sure. You know, so in the day-to-day operations for any business, whether they really think they're green or not, that, you know, how are they doing things? What are they spending their money on? Where are they expending resources on? Is it, maybe it's transportation, maybe it's energy consumption, so they can look at energy efficiency, they can look at fuel efficiency, maybe it's resources that they're consuming, you know, for example, water, paper, whatever resources are involved in their business, how could they be more efficient with those? And very often what they find is that there are things, plenty of things they can do, which both save money and which are good for the planet, too. And that's what big business has found. That's why, you know, the Fortune 500 companies are investing big time in sustainability, is because they figured out a long time ago this actually is good for their business, that it is good for the bottom line, that this assumption isn't true at all, that it's got to cost a lot for the business and therefore make them less profitable. You can be more profitable and greener and do it all at the same time.
So operational, the first category really being the day-to-day activities, materials used, packaging, you know, what fuel type, biodiesel or not in the fleet, whatever it may be, really looking at the day-to-day operations in that category. Then what's next?
So the next one would be if you were going to be a green business, how can you use sustainability as a factor to differentiate yourself from the ground up? You know, how can you use this as a tool? Maybe you have a personal commitment to sustainability, which is great. Maybe you really want to make a difference in the world for you and your kids and everybody else. How are you going to make that, turn that into a central part of an organizing focus for your business? Because I think that's what it really, when you call someone a green business, that's what makes them stand out, is that, yes, they're a business, but, you know, sustainability isn't just an add-on, isn't just, you know, a secondary part of the business. It's a central focus for what they're trying to achieve. So how can you use sustainability to achieve that, not just to be a successful green business, but really, you know, to make you stand out and to be a successful competitor with everybody else out there?
Hey, Glenn, is there actually a definition for being a green business, or is there a certification or anything like that for being a green business?
You know, there are some certifications. You know, you can go out and look at people like the Green Business Bureau, which are helpful, and they provide some guidelines and a process for how you can do that. And there's varying definitions about what it is that, you know, defines green. So I'm not going to, you know, say one definition is a better than another. For me personally, I think what sustainability is all about, it's about thinking of the long term. It's about, you know, thinking not just about profits for this week or this quarter. It's about thinking about where your business is going to be, where the world is going to be, years and decades down the road, and acting like in a way that's consistent with that. You know, we can't just have a linear economy over the long run where we're extracting resources, manufacturing them into stuff, and then throwing it away. It's not sustainable. We can't keep it up. There's an end to how far you can go with that. And so where do we want to see it? And it's not just about resources. It's about the environment, you know, and all the animals and creatures out there. But it's also about people, which I think is forgotten sometimes. It's another assumption is if it's something which is good for the environment, it's bad for people. And you hear that torn around a lot, like in political circles. And, you know, I don't think that's true at all. I think that, you know, we're talking about sustainability. This is stuff that's good for people, good for them now and good for them later on. It's good for you. It's good for your kids. It's good for all of us for the long run. So
since we're talking workplaces, I would actually turn it around and say, the greener a company gets and, you know, encouraging bike riding and all that, it actually might make a more, engaged workforce, because people do like to know that their workplace is in line with their personal values. It's important to many people.
Oh, absolutely. You know, studies have shown that when you bring your employees into this stuff, you get them involved, that they're excited to be part of a company like that, the company that isn't just about, you know, squeezing profit out at any cost, a company that really stands for something. It stands for, you know, making and creating a better world, and that they're putting their money where their mouth is. They're really, you know, implementing an action and letting their employees be a part of that. They love that. Employees are more engaged, they're more productive, and they're excited about going to work every day.
Yes, we are speaking with Dr. Glenn Crosten on An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And today's topic is eco-entrepreneurs growing a green business. So, Glenn, you pointed out there are three areas. One is operational, the materials, the packaging, then how are the daily activities being done. Then the second big category is the organizing principle of the company. Am I summing up that correctly? Like, is the spirit of the company geared towards green, a certain topic perhaps, helping the environment, whatever it may be?
What is your mission? What's your company's mission?
Yes, and that doesn't necessarily need to reflect in the very product that is being produced. It's more the culture of the company, yes?
Sure, absolutely. It's the whole deal, you know, and it's very often will be part of the product, because you want to make sure your product is produced in a way which is consistent with your values. But it runs throughout the business from top to bottom, from, you know, all the way from suppliers to consumers. It's you know, a comprehensive viewpoint about what sustainability is and how they can be a part of it, making it a part of their daily work life.
So is there a third category outside of these two that you've just summarized for us?
Yeah, another one would be about communications, about telling their story. That's, I think, something people often forget about. They put all of their time and energy into the product or the service they're trying to provide the idea of what they want to achieve. And then when it comes time to really roll the business out and get started, they sometimes forget about the fact that, you know, it's not, unfortunately, the field of dreams model isn't going to work here. That, you know, it's not that you just build it and they will come. You got to tell people about it. You got to find a way to connect with people. What is your story? What is it that's going to really connect with consumers out there to get them excited about what you're trying to do? So, you know, what's your story? And then finding a way to tell it, a way to reach all those people out there who, you know, probably they will be very excited once they hear about it. But if they don't hear about it, they're never going to know. They're never going to be a part of your business.
Yeah, I think those are the things that really differentiate one business from another. I love when I am trying to decide which product to go with, and I find a company that says, we have a carbon offset program. So for all of our corporate travel, we plant trees in the rainforest. For example, I think Alter Eco does that. We've had them on our show before, too. Those kinds of commitments, they're telling their story, their commitment to green, and that's really what builds brand loyalty, company loyalty.
Yeah, you know, people, that is one thing. People can easily switch from product to product now. So if you want loyalty, if you want to stick with you, then having a story, having some values to stand up for, that'll be the thing that differentiates you. That's what's going to get people coming back. And, you know, like people like Gary Hirschberg, Stonyfield Farming, of course they have great yogurt, but they've also got a great story behind it about their commitment to producing their product in a way which is consistent with a sound environment, healthy communities, and a better world down the road.
Yes, and we've seen it in food especially, that people do want to know where their food comes from. In other words, they want the story of their food. They want the story of how it is grown, how it is being produced, who's producing it for them. And but it is true in any other area of the green or sustainable marketplace and business side, where people really, they do want to hear the full story. Isn't that true? Is that your experience as well?
Oh, absolutely. You know, people connect with, a story is something that people really connect with. And it's not just about statistics or about the price on the cup or the ingredients written on the cup. It's the whole story that goes behind it. That's what a good marketing campaign is. It's, you know, it's giving people a reason to believe, giving them the whole story about who you are and why you matter.
Great. Yes. We will take a quick break to honor our underwriters, Dr. Glenn Crossan, today with us. But Glenn, please stay with us. We have a bunch more questions. We want to walk through that book of yours and your best advice for anyone who's out there right now listening to this, who has a great green business idea of, you know, what's the principle that you recommend, and what are the most often made mistakes or the most often overlooked resources that are so readily available. So please stay with us. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Today's topic is green eco-entrepreneurs. And again, with us is Dr. Glenn Crossan, an expert in this field. We'll take a quick break, but we'll be back with more. Stay tuned.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Want to feel your absolute best this spring? Full of energy, clarity, and health? Join Bowman College founder Dr. Ed Bowman at our Vitality Fasting Retreat for the ultimate therapeutic mind and body cleanse. Detoxify, renew, and start fresh through a fun and rejuvenating four-day retreat at the beautiful Stillheart Institute in Woodside, California. The Bowman College Vitality Fasting Retreat is held May 10th through the 13th, and space is limited. So sign up today. For more information, visit bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N college.org.
The Farmer Veteran Coalition is a nonprofit organization dedicated to provide veterans with resources, education, and technical assistance to prepare them to become successful farmers. After serving their country, many veterans are interested in working with the land but do not have a background in farming or ranching. Help the Farmer Veteran Coalition to assist veterans in starting a new career in sustainable agriculture. For more information, please visit farmvetco.org. That's farmvetco.org.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Today's topic is eco-entrepreneurs, growing a green business. All the tips and tricks and ideas you need and resources you might need to start your idea finally this year, the one that you've been holding in your head for so much time. This is the year to do it, because this is the time for opportunities, and people do honor commitments to the environment and your inspiration behind your business. We are with Dr. Glenn Crosten, and before we go back into that interview, here's the weekly produce update with our own produce maven, Dr. Mark Mokihi. What's in season, Mark?
Yes, and what's in season is cherries. It's the start of, it's kind of the beginning of spring. Yeah, the beginning of summer, spring, the beginning of stone fruit season. And on the line, as always, we have Earl Herrick from Earl's Organic Produce in San Francisco, the voice of the market, calling us to talk a little bit about what's going on with the cherry crop this year. Earl, are you there?
Hey. Yeah, good morning, gang.
Hi, Earl.
Hey, Earl.
Good morning. So, you know, a couple weeks ago we talked about the beginning of spring and strawberries and asparagus and artichokes. Well, if there's anything that is a herald of summer, I'm quite sure it's going to be cherries.
I was just saying that this morning before the show. It's so exciting to see. It almost has a certain melancholy to me because it is really the first, you know, stone fruit summer tree crop. And it means that when cherry season is over, the season is kind of slowly coming to an end. I mean, we are just starting, but for me, cherries are, it's one of those things where, you know, it's wonderful and so exciting, and wow, we're already heading into the summer of this year.
Well, you know, we should start seeing them right around the middle of May, and the early varieties will start hitting then, and then we'll go all the way into August as it goes up north.
Yes.
So Earl, are you saying we're going to have to wait a couple of weeks before we start seeing cherries? I mean, here it's Earth Day weekend, and did the rain slow them down a little bit, or?
No, the rains came at a really good time, because if they came any later, you're going to be damaging fruit that's already developed. And so right now, actually, we're right on time. It's been a perfect season so far.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we got to watch out for any last-minute rain as the fruit is coming on.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that can happen and happens almost every 2 or 3 years anyway.
What's happening to cherries when it's raining, Mark or Earl?
Well, when the fruit gets ripe, if you have ripe fruit and it gets hit with rain, and if it's any firm rain, it will bruise the fruit right there.
Oh, right then.
And now it's not uncommon to have hail in the spring out here in California. And hail, of course, will just damage the fruit entirely. So it's very, very difficult after you have a hard rain, because sometimes the bruising doesn't show up until after it's picked and in a box.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, well, but it has been a good season so far.
And another thing on the rain is at the stem end, it can absorb water there, and so it can cause the cherries to split if they're already ripe.
Yeah, so one of the things you want to look for when you're picking cherries in your produce department is right around the stem, and it's called the stem bowl, where the stem enters the fruit. And if it's brown there, that's generally where the first problem is going to start.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, Earl, let's talk about cherries. Let's talk about, often when you go to the market, you know, you see the word red cherries. And I know that there's many varieties. What's the scoop on varieties as far as cherries are out there?
Well, there's almost endless varieties, because they keep on developing some. Actually, the newest development in cherries are new varieties that can be tolerant of heat. So areas further south can start growing cherries. Mm-hmm. Because the biggest challenge for a cherry is heat.
Mm-hmm.
The cherry, the weather that they prefer is actually threatening weather, but only threatening. In other words, they like cloudy, cool, overcast.
Mm.
The threat of the rain is good, but they don't want rain.
And so what are some of the more common varieties
there's Brooks, Chelan, of course, the big one, the famous one is the Bing. Then you can get into Tulare, a coral, a Van, a Larian, and of course another favorite is
Rainier.
Rainier. Which is, of course, the red and cream color.
And so, Earl, when the cherries start coming on, it's not Bings. That's a little bit later crop. What are we seeing right off the shoot?
The first thing you're going to see is a Brook, or maybe a Chelan.
And now, those are sweet cherries, right? Not sour, or are they sour?
Yeah, they're just sweet, and also, you want to pick them, you want to choose the ones in your market, the darker, the sweeter.
Sure, yes. Do you see ever sour cherries, or are those more for, you know, processing and for sauces and whatnot?
Yeah, that's much more of a kind of an heirloom thing, maybe a U-pick that people might have just a couple trees of. That's really not anything you're going to see commercially available much.
Usually it's always sweet, right? What's in the marketplace.
Yes. Oh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, as you were saying, Mark, a lot of people don't even, they don't recognize the varieties anymore. They're labeling dark red cherry or red cherries. And, you know, that's something that you and I have talked about over the years, that that there's a loss of recognition of what we're eating. And you know, I don't think, you know, that's nothing that you and I approve of, if you will.
Yeah, it's so subtle, right? I'm sure all the varieties you just mentioned, they all taste just a little bit different, right?
Comparison.
And
the one that's
so wonderful.
The classic that I think we think of when we think of a cherry, and that's the Bing. It's firm and crunchy, dark red, and it's also almost purple on the outside.
Yes.
And honestly, to eat a lot of cherries, watch out. That can give you a bit of a stomach ache.
Yes.
Well, thank you for that advice, Earl, as we're beginning the cherry season. And we'll remind all our listeners not to eat too many cherries at one time because of your advice. But, hey, Earl, as always, thank you so much for being on the show. We look forward to having you next week and can't wait to hear what we're going to talk about then.
Always great talking to you guys.
Thanks for announcing the cherry season. So exciting.
Woohoo!
Thanks, Earl.
Thanks, Earl. So a couple quick things to finish up the what's in season is, if you're going to keep your cherries, you know, you go to the farmer's market and you may be buying them out of boxes that are room temperature or even at your stores. For every hour, cherries can lose more quality in 1 hour at room temperature than a whole day in the refrigerator. So it's good when you get them home to put them in the refrigerator. And they'll store up to 10 days in a bag in your fridge. Don't wash them until you're right ready to eat them, because otherwise they'll start breaking down in your refrigerator. Also, cherries can be frozen, and you can either pit them beforehand or just leave the pit in, and you just lay them in single layers on a tray and stick them in the freezer until frozen. Then you can just stick them into a container for later on, so you don't have to miss that cherry season. You can put those in your smoothies, as some people in the room really like to do, I know. Or mix them with, add them to chocolate or things like that. And as Earl said, lastly, really key, ask your produce person what variety it is, because it will make a difference to you, because a lot of the earlier varieties are not even close to the flavor of a Bing cherry, and you'll want to know what varieties you're eating as the season goes on, so you can make that choice.
So fun.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you for this weekly update, The World of Produce, What's in Season with Mark Mulcahy. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And our topic today is eco-entrepreneurs growing a green business. And we couldn't have anyone better on the show than Dr. Glenn Crosston, the founder of Starting Up Green and author of two books, 75 Green Business You Can Start to Make Money and Make a Difference, and An Entrepreneur's Toolkit for Starting a Green Business from Business Plan to Profits.
Hey, Glenn, what are you seeing as the greatest oversight that many people make when they're doing green businesses?
Well, I think one big oversight is about the market they're trying to reach. You know, who are the people this product is for anyway? Because there's really kind of two markets. One is the sustainability-related market, folks out there who are really the greenest Americans and ones who would focus on sustainability as one of their top values. And unfortunately, that's not everybody. In fact, you know, the number of people who buy primarily sustainability-related stuff just because is, you know, single digit, maybe 5-10% of the people. And, you know, if you talk about organic produce, it's not 100% of our produce is organic. It's maybe about 4-5%. And, you know, the same goes for a lot of different categories. So people think that because they're sustainable, everybody is. Unfortunately, it's not true. So the big missing opportunity there is trying to reach the mainstream, trying to reach everybody else. You know, how about the other 95% of the market out there? It's a big missed opportunity for a lot of folks. Mm-hmm. And it's something that, you know, which is maybe that's by thinking about their product differently, it's somebody they can reach. You know, making sure the message isn't just about having a sustainable product, having a green product, having a great product, which is also sustainable.
So that's great advice. Is there any, what other really good advice can you offer someone who has a great eco or green idea?
I think another piece of advice is to make sure that they're building, you know, they're building a profitable business. You know, it's one thing having an idea about something you want to achieve, a better world you want to create, which is great and important and fantastic and not to be underestimated. But they've also got to make a business around it, you know, something which makes money. And sometimes people have this idea that somehow making money is opposed to going green, that you can't do both. But if you want to build a green business, you got to do both. You got to have both of those ideas in your head at the same time. So you got to have a clear vision about how you're going to get there, not just the thing you want to make, but how you're going to build a profitable business around that. What's your plan? Mm-hmm.
So speaking about different advice that you might have, is there something that you might consider like the most underutilized resource for green businesses? Is it like tax breaks, for example, or green directories, specific networking, or working with nonprofits, something that kind of is a little bit underutilized?
I think one biggie is just reaching out to other people and talking to people in your community, talking to people in the green business community, where, you know, these are people, and talking to people in the nonprofit community too, people who share your values, they're excited to help you out. Don't underestimate the power of that. You know, of course, every business benefits from networking, from getting out and meeting more people, making those connections, especially true for green businesses, I think, because when you're talking about sustainability, all kinds of people want to help you out. Take advantage of that. You know, you're not the first ones to go down this road when it comes to sustainability. So go out, talk to those people, you know, learn from them, learn from the mistakes as well as the successes, and usually people will be more than happy to help you out with that.
We're speaking with Dr. Glenn Crosston today on An Organic Conversation. The show is about eco-entrepreneurialism, growing a green business. Glenn, do you have a couple of examples of successful companies that you have seen where it was a really simple idea and it did differentiate them enough in the marketplace to actually carve out a little niche there?
Sure, absolutely. You know, one is a guy named Spencer Brown in L.A., and he founded a business called Rent a Green Box. And, you know, Spencer was moving one day, he had a bunch of cardboard boxes, taking them out to the landfill, and he spent hundreds of dollars in the boxes and then more money to throw them away. And so going out to the landfill, standing there and thinking, how crazy is this that I'm wasting all this money and it's bad for the planet too? So he decided to create a better way to move. He recycled plastic from the landfill, took those bottles, he fashioned them into an innovative plastic box, which he now rents to people. You call him up, he brings the boxes to your house when you're ready to move. You move, he comes, picks the boxes up, and not only is it greener, but it's actually cheaper too. So, you know, it makes great sense business-wise, because people save money.
That's
great.
And
it's also great for the environment. So he's got both of those things going hand in hand, building a business around that and doing great. You know, and there's more like, so TerraCycle is this big business where it's based around this idea of taking trash and viewing it not just as a problem, but as a resource. So they're taking juice pouches, for example, and people send the juice pouches back and they make new stuff out of like lunch boxes. There's another business here in town in San Diego called Hometown Farms, where they're coming out with an innovative way, new way to grow local produce. You know, we were talking about local produce earlier. So, you know, Dan Gibbs at Hometown Farms finding a way to do that. You know, every one of these are people who are not just, you know, trying to do the green thing, but trying to be building a successful business around it
as well. Of course.
And having a lot of luck with that.
Yes.
Because it's not just a green business, it's a great business.
Exactly. We had a gentleman on the show a few months ago, right before Christmas, who has a rent a Christmas tree, and then it's kind of your pet for the rest of your life. He kind of picks them up again and then stores them for you and nourishes them. It's a live tree, and it comes, you know, every Christmas it comes home to basically. So there are dozens and dozens and dozens of great ideas. We're speaking with Dr. Glenn Crosston today, Starting Up Green. And that's actually your website, startingupgreen.com, for more information. And if people want to contact you to get your best advice on perhaps their idea, you do that now professionally. You study biology, but this is now really your full-time job, right? Because there's so much need for your wisdom.
Sure. You know, now there's a big need for it, but like, you know, all these problems we have, these are also opportunities for us as a society and for individuals, as entrepreneurs, to make a big difference. And you know,
yes,
there's no bigger need than now, and there's no bigger opportunity than now. So,
yes.
You know, if people want to get in touch, I look forward to hearing their story and seeing what we can do.
Yeah, go to startingupgreen.com. Thank you, Glenn, Dr. Glenn Crosston, being on the show today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks,
Glenn,
for taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And we're coming up with another brilliant idea of shared office space, of what can be done with existing environments and what might be a smarter solution, all here on the show today. Stay tuned for more. We'll take a super quick break and we'll be right back.
I can show you the world, shining, shimmering, splendid. Tell me, princess, now when did you last let your heart decide? I can open your eyes, take you wonder by wonder, over sideways and under. On a magic carpet ride, a whole new world, a new fantastic point of view, no one to tell us no.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at fryewine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Want to feel your absolute best this spring? Full of energy, clarity, and health? Join Bowman College founder Dr. Ed Bowman at our Vitality Fasting Retreat for the ultimate therapeutic mind and body cleanse. Detoxify, renew, and start fresh through a fun and rejuvenating four-day retreat at the beautiful Still Heart Institute in Woodside, California. The Bowman College Vitality Fasting Retreat is held May 10th through the 13th, and space is limited, so sign up today. For more information, visit bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N college.org.
Do you feel run down, stressed, overweight, or overloaded? Urban Remedy is a delicious 100% organic juice cleansing program designed to jumpstart your body's natural healing and cleansing abilities. This delicious juice feast, created by leading acupuncturist Nika Pasquale, is rich in vital nutrients, minerals, and enzymes, providing you with all the nutritional nourishment you need to thrive. Delivered directly to your doorstep. Urban Remedy, a convenient way to boost your energy and balance your body. Place your order today at urbanremedy.com. That's urbanremedy.com. The Farmer Veteran Coalition is a nonprofit organization dedicated to provide veterans with resources, education, and technical assistance to prepare them to become successful farmers. After serving their country, many veterans are interested in working with the land but do not have a background in farming or ranching. Help the Farmer Veteran Coalition to assist veterans in starting a new career in sustainable agriculture. For more information, please visit farmvetco.org. That's farmvetco.org.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Today's topic on an organic conversation is eco-entrepreneurs growing a green business or greening the one you have. Most of us had a business idea at least once in our lifetime, and this show hopefully will kick things in motion and inspire you to make your dream a reality. Before we go into the next interview with a very creative way of organizing office space, here's our very own Sitarani Palomar, Chef Sita, with her holistic bite.
I love this new theme of sound effects that go with the holistic bite. Very exciting. Thank you, Helge. Well, we talked a little bit earlier about cherries. Cherries signifying the beginning of spring and summer. They're also the first stone fruit we're seeing. Yum. And the first berries, which is really exciting because there's so much color and health benefits from the berry family. And cherries being this beautiful red, purple color. It's the first red we're going to see. We're going to see strawberries and tomatoes come very soon. And these beautiful red-blue colors are a signal that they are high in a class of antioxidants, a class of phytonutrients that we call anthocyanins. So they also have high doses of sweetness, which I love when we get into the summer season, with all of this sweetness being a great dessert instead of doing sugar, for example. And since we just did a show on cleansing the other day, I think it would be really great to look at having something. I mean, I love oranges and citrus for dessert too, but once you get through that winter season, you're looking for something that has a little bit more pizzazz, like cherries do. And I think cherries are really a very precious fruit, whether it's the delicate cherry blossoms that we look forward to seeing either on the East Coast or on the West Coast, or that deep hue of color or their characteristic flavor that's so good in chocolate or savory sauces with rosemary. There's so much to enjoy when we start seeing these fruits of summer come. And I read this really lovely story by Rebecca Wood. Or actually, it's a fact about the reason that Broadway Street in New York changes its specific angular course around East 10th Street is because there used to be a cherry tree growing in that spot. And so they diverged the road because they thought that the cherry tree had more value in its place than the original course for Broadway Street. So lots of reverence for cherries. I know I'm excited to put them in all kinds of things. Mark made a comment earlier about putting them into smoothies, which I'm known to show up to the studio with a cherry cacao smoothie every morning. Or indulging in all kinds of delicious cherry culinary uses. We've got some recipes on the site, and we look forward to hearing from you guys about how you like to use cherries. So visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/anorganicconversation, and let us know what's your favorite way to enjoy this beloved summer fruit. And that's your Holistic Bite.
Thank you, Sita Rani Palomar, Chef Sita. Wow, they changed the direction of the street, or the exact lineup of the street because of a cherry tree. It happens all the time.
Yep. Well, it used to.
That is so cool. Of course, in New York of all, right? In Manhattan. Yeah. Good. Yes. Good reminder. The cherry tree is more valuable than a street at times. We are talking about eco-entrepreneurs growing a green business, actually about the cherry tree. We are talking about valuing green attributes of your business, either an existing business that wants to go more green, or starting a new business from the ground up that is green, green-focused, has a green principle that it is organized around, or it helps community, which is the topic of the next interview. With us now is Rebecca Bryan, co-founder and community curator, and we'll discuss that title in a minute, of Next Space, the San Francisco-based company, nextspace.us, U.S., Rebecca, are you with us?
I am. Hello.
It's
so lovely to be here.
We are. This is great.
I love that.
Are you with us? Yes, we are. Yes. Talk about community.
She does. She carries that community spirit. So, Rebecca, tell us about NextSpace and the concept behind it. Who's using it? Why is it becoming such a super fun trend? And I know you're a crazy, enthusiastic person, so you've got lots of reasons to encourage people to look at this clever idea.
The thing that, so what is co-working? And the answer to that question is, it's a collaborative workplace, but it's where we offer a really amazing space and a really amazing community to be a part of. And when those two things go together, you have something that we call the next phase effect, which is the accelerated serendipity that happens every day. Members get a chance to sit next to one another, have coffee, have drinks every Friday, and you might be sitting next to your future business partner, you might be sitting next to your next best friend, your spouse. I mean, you just, it's those
Are you serious? People have gotten married at NextSpace in a shared office environment where all kinds of people and businesses and ideas come together just to share office space. And as you said, those serendipitous moments, then of course, if we build that community in an office environment, have you had cases where people actually found their life partner and have gotten married?
Yes, We have. we've had just about every type of interaction you can imagine.
Fascinating.
Under the roof.
Where was the idea born? Why was it started? What was the need for this idea?
It kind of started in two different directions. In Santa Cruz, where the original location started, it was an economic development play. In Santa Cruz, the idea was, wouldn't it be better to have 200 one-person companies than bring in one 200-person company to headquarter here?
Mm-hmm.
And it was also around keeping people local. Santa Cruz is such a educated, intelligent, talented city, but so many of the residents go over the hill to Silicon Valley. And they hate the commute, and they hate the drive, and they hate the waste, but that's where the jobs are.
Sure.
So now all of a sudden the jobs are in Santa Cruz at home, so people can spend their money locally, save on resources, save on gas. The whole shareable economy is so much better for the world and so much more sustainable.
So you have all these people who, instead of having office space at their house or sitting in a big office space, they're all sharing office spaces in one area. So give us some ideas on how that becomes more of a green a green option for the world and for the entrepreneurs.
Well, for example, let's say you had these 200 people that were working from home, using their home resources all individually, heating or cooling 200 homes. Now you have them all in one area. So you're consolidating HVAC costs and usage. You're saving on electricity.
Yeah, and it's so true. I mean, even like printers, right? Every one of us has a printer at home, most of us, I would think, and we don't use it every single day. Or, I mean, this is just office, but we could go on forever. How many leaf blowers do we have? Or how many tools, how many ladders have we sold in the United States that just sit there for 1 hour weekend use, right? And it seems like NextSpace is organized around that same principle of, if we can have many people come together of all different kinds of backgrounds and ideas around business, which is already great, and share desks and the room and printers, it does save for their business expenses and makes NextSpace such a green idea.
It does, and you also end up having people commute much less. Before the Santa Cruz NextSpace, if you were driving 45 minutes each direction over the hill, a car is absolutely mandatory. B, you're spending a lot of money on gas, which is, both the cost and the resource. So keeping people local really reduces their carbon footprint and their use of natural resources.
Yes. Have you noticed an increased commitment to eco business practices? Or what kind of clientele do you work with? I mean, if somebody doesn't want to work from home, and they do want to sit in a creative work environment, which is really some people just I'm one of those people. I like working from home, but it's honestly not my most productive time. If I can go to an office and there's an office flair in that room and other people working on their things quietly. Have you noticed that really influences the work culture for someone to provide that environment? And does that affect the increased commitment to eco-business practices?
Well, I think the answer to your first question is it definitely affects the members and productivity. We had one member tell us, he's a very quantitative guy, that he was doing the same work at home that he was doing prior to joining NextSpace, and he was doing it at half speed.
Yes.
And he knew his 9-month membership at NextSpace saved him an additional 9 months of, he was 9 months ahead of where he would have been otherwise.
Nice.
So yes, it highly affects the members. And then in relation to their desire to be more environmentally friendly, it's not really optional at a space to, you know, we have the compost bin, the recycling bin, the landfill bin, and we have a lot of both signage and social pressure to follow the guidelines. You know, we have the recycling bins near the printer. So it's just, it's not even really an option to not comply.
Which is really your commitment as Next Space too, right? I know you serve fair trade coffee that people get. And so everything around Next Space is geared with that environmental stewardship and reduction of resources in mind. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have, you know, instead of having tanks of water, we have the filtered water on the taps. And instead of having, you know, even coffee filters, we have the mesh coffee filter. We use the good light bulbs whenever possible. So it's something that's important to us, and because of that, it's just the way things are here, and it's that way at all of our locations. So it's not really, oh, I don't feel like taking the compost out, so I'm just not going to bother. It's you know, we do enough of the facilitation that it's just as easy to compost and recycle as it is to throw things in landfill, and you're highly socially encouraged to really pay attention to what you're throwing out where.
Rebecca, you mentioned that you have locations, plural, more than just Santa Cruz and San Francisco. Where can people find Next Space co-working spaces across the country?
Right now, all of our locations are in California. We are in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Santa Cruz, and San Jose. We are working on a fifth location that I cannot tell you the exact location for. It's under wraps until our PR firm tells us we can talk about it. but that'll be our fifth location that should be opening around the end of May. And then we have nationwide expansion plans for later this year.
And you said that there are members. How does somebody get involved in Next Space or become a member? What's the process?
So the structure is a little bit like a gym or a country club. Where you join as a member. So no one's renting anything, no one's leasing anything. You're a member, and we do that for two reasons. One, we're not licensed to be landlords, but the more important reason to us is it is a lot more than a lease or a rent. You really are a member of something that includes events and friendship and assistance and connection to all of these other people. So that's the structure. And you basically, you come in, you take a tour of the space, you test it out for a day. We're happy to offer your listeners one free day pass at any of our locations.
Very cool.
Work for the day. And then you sign up. It's about a 20-minute process.
Great. So, yes, if you mention An Organic Conversation at Next Space, and for all locations, go to nextspace.us. You get one free workday. That's wonderful. Thanks for that offer. That's Rebecca Bryan, co-founder and community curator at Next Space, joining us today from San Francisco. Good luck, Rebecca. Thanks for your time today. And yes, people may check out Next Space very soon.
Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah,
it was
thanks.
A pleasure.
Thanks for being with us.
Bye, Rebecca. Thank you.
That's great. Wow. Yes. And I've been to the Next Space office actually in San Francisco. It's all fair trade coffee, very quiet, very creative energy.
Yeah, definitely.
Great people. They're all there because they want to be there.
It's very stylish, too. Like, it's such a nice environment instead of being at home by yourself with your same old things.
Nextspace.us. Yeah, check it out.
Yeah. And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation.
An Organic Conversation is a proud production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producers Kristen Ponger, studio engineer Robert Costa, production assistant Lori McKay.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, visit iTunes or AnOrganicConversation.com.
We're your host, Helge Helberg.
Mark Mulcahy.
And Sita Rani Palomar.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.